Morning. Such a full house, it's lovely. I need you to first use your imagination this morning. I need you to imagine this scene. You're on the Florida coast. The sun is setting like a gigantic orange ball. It's the cool evening on a vacant, isolated stretch of beach. The water is lapping at the shore. The breeze is blowing slightly. There are one or two joggers, a few fishermen. Most people have gone home for the day. You look up and you see an old man with bent shoulders, bushy eyebrows and bony features hobbling down the beach carrying a bucket. He takes the bucket to the pier, looks up to the sky, and all of a sudden you see a mass of dancing dots. You soon realise that these dots are seagulls and they're coming down out of nowhere. The man takes out of his bucket handfuls of shrimp and begins to throw them all over the dock. The seagulls come down all around him. Some land on his shoulders, some land on his hat, and they eat the shrimp. Long after the shrimp are gone, the feather friends linger, and the old man with his birds. So who is this man who is feeding these seagulls? And why is he doing this? Well, the man in that scene was actually a guy called Eddie Rickenbacker, a famous World War II pilot. And his plane, the Flying Fortress, went down in 1942. And no one thought he could be rescued. He and his eight passengers escaped death by climbing onto rafts where they remained for 30 days. They fought thirst, sun and sharks. Some of the sharks were 9 feet long and the boats they were in were only 8 foot long. But what nearly killed them was the starvation. With the rations gone, they had no food. But every day, Eddie Rickenbacker would hold a daily devotional of prayer and thanks to God. And one day after his devotional, he sat back, put his hat over his eyes, and tried to get some sleep. Within a few moments, he found something on his head. He knew in an instant it was a seagull. He couldn't work out where the seagull had come from. They're in the middle of the ocean. And him and the other guys on the boat grabbed that seagull and they used it for food. And they used the intestines of the seagull for a fishing line and they survived. See, Eddie Rickenbacker never forgot that seagull. Never forgot that foreign bird who came and became a sacrificial guest for him and his friends. And every week he went out onto the pier with his bucket of shrimp to say thank you. That story is read in Luke, with a story about 10 lepers who met Jesus. And these lepers had a problem. They all had a condition. And the law had, the Jewish law at the time, had a specific rules of how to deal with lepers. This is what the law said. A person who has a dreaded skin disease, or leprosy, must wear torn clothes, leave his hair uncombed, cover the lower part of his face and call out, "Unclean, unclean." He remains unclean as long as he has the disease. He must live outside the camp, away from others. It's a pretty bleak outcome, a bleak life for these lepers. They're almost considered as dead. And all these rules were hygienically made sense. The main reason was because they were unclean. And the law and God did not want the unclean mixing with the clean. The unholy with the holy. And so they were cast out from society, cast out from life. They were, as I said, walking dead. They were outcasts and rejected. No one cared about them. But then Jesus came into the lives of these lepers and offered them a cure for their condition. See, the lepers did not approach Jesus. They stood at a distance, because they were not able to. And they called out to him as Jesus came by and said, "Lord, Master, have pity on us." They knew who he was. They knew what he could do. But the cure that Jesus gave them was not maybe what they may have expected. When we look at other healings that Jesus gave in the Gospels, we read that he healed them. Maybe he touched them. But most of the time they were healed instantly. But what Jesus says to these lepers, he says, "Go and show yourself to the priest." Maybe a strange thing. But it was the role of the priest who would declare someone who was cured of leprosy as clean. It was only the priest who would allow that person back into the camp, back into society. They were not allowed back until the priest gave the all clear. And what Jesus was doing, he was putting the faith of these men to the test. They had to act as if they were cured. They need to do nothing but obey what Jesus said. Obey him and they would be clean. See, what Jesus gave them, or what he offered them, was a gift. It was a gift. They didn't have to earn it. They didn't have to do anything to receive it. All they had to do was accept what he said and believe. So the problem with a gift is when a gift has to be earned, it's no longer a gift, and it's an award. It's a huge difference between a gift and an award. We read on the way, those men were made clean. They were cured. Having looked at the condition and the cure, we come to the conviction. One of the men, when he realised he was cured, he returned to Jesus. He returned, not quietly, but he came praising God in a loud voice. And as we read through the Gospels, it's not an uncommon reaction for people who have been healed by Jesus to be full of joy. He had a joy and a freeness that he maybe never experienced before. He was a nobody, an outcast, alienated from society and dead. Now he was somebody with life and a future, clean from disease. It's no wonder he was shouting and praising and thanking God. And as I was looking at this story, I was thinking back of thinking forward to the story of Peter when he met the cripple at the temple. And he healed healed the cripple. And we read in Acts where the cripple went about walking and jumping and praising God. That is a reaction. That is a reaction of being healed and touched by Jesus, leaping and praising God. So he came to Jesus and he threw himself at his feet and thanked him, probably more than once. His gratitude was flowing out. We can almost imagine this leper throwing himself at Jesus' feet, the tears of joy flowing from his eyes, thinking of where he was, and now realising the life that he now has. And then Jesus says, where are the other nine? Weren't 10 healed? Why has only one come back to give thanks to God? You see, all of those 10 were healed, but only one came back to thank God. Only one. So what can we learn from this story? What can we learn from the leper? Well, the first thing we learn is we have also a condition. We have a condition very similar to those lepers. But it's not leprosy. It's a condition called sin. And it's interesting that Luke does not record that these lepers, one was more leprous than the other. We don't read that one had been a leper more than the other. They're all the same. They were all lepers. There's no distinction. And so it is with us. We are not all alike sinners, but we're all sinners alike. And as that leper was cast out of society because of his disease, so we are cast out from God's presence because of our disease of sin. Our sin has separated us, has estranged us and alienated us from God with no hope of return. The leper was regarded as dead. And of course, Paul writes in Ephesians, he calls those who are lost in sin as spiritually dead. The leper couldn't return to society by his own means, neither can we. Before we can return to God, we need to be cured. Before we can come back to God, we need to be clean. Of course, there is a cure. There is a cure for our sin. The offer that Jesus gave to those lepers, the same offer that he gives to us. Those lepers were dressed in filthy rags, that's all they had. But Jesus gave them a cure, and he gives us a cure. How does he do it? Well, I'm going to get Bill to somehow demonstrate this, or hopefully we'll demonstrate this, as how Jesus gives us that cure. That is pretty much a filthy rag. No one wants to wear this, certainly not Bill. This is nasty, it's full of everything. It's that.
I like better. Yeah. I know you've got Mickey Mouse on the front.
I know.
I'll have you know, this is my wife's nightie. I don't use it for feeding my bike.
Well, I must admit, if you learn nothing more than this morning, at least you can see Bill dressed in Mickey Mouse nightie. We see, that is a picture of us as sinners. We're dressed in filthy rags. We can't get rid of them, we're stuck with them, we're born with them, we carry them through our life, and we'll die with them. But what does Jesus do? He did this. Took the rags off us and threw them away. That's what he did. He got rid of the rags of the lepers, and he gets rid of our rags. But that is only half the story. If it was just that, that would be amazing in itself. But he goes one step further. You see, having got rid of our filthy rags, he gives us his royal robes, his pure robes, his righteous robes, the robes that we don't deserve. By his mercy, he takes our rags, and by his grace, he gives us his robes. Some words from Isaiah. We despised him and rejected him. No one would even look at him. We ignored him as if he were nothing. But he endured the suffering that should have been ours, the pain that we should have borne. Those robes didn't come cheap. They came at the life of Christ. He gave for us that we can have those robes. Justly gave those lepers a gift. We can't own those robes. They're a gift. For many people, that gift is offered, reject it. They choose to stay in their rags. They choose to keep hold of them. And they say to Jesus, thanks, but no thanks. And they live in their rags. This morning, are we in our rags? Or have we accepted that gift and taken on those royal robes? So find a conviction for us. What's our response to receiving those robes? Well, the leper's response was ingratitude. See, most people upon receiving a gift would thank the giver, particularly if the gift is precious and cost them a lot. They want to thank the person who gave. And that leper's gratitude would welled up, so should ours. Our thanks and praise should be pouring up, welling up and pouring out thanks and praise to the Lord. See, we do thank him in our prayers, we thank him in our songs of worship. But I'm not sure that's enough. I'm not sure it's enough just to thank him in our words. Do our words give sufficient thanks to what Jesus has done? Do our words satisfy our thanks? See, the honest truth is, our words can never really express our thanks to him, because it goes beyond words. But there are three significant ways I think that we can give our thanks to God, and very briefly, we can thank God through our living. See, Paul said in Romans about we should offer our lives as a living sacrifice, we should abandon ourselves, to give all to God, to have Christ at the centre of all we do. And when we do that, it's pleasing to him. All the time we have to have Christ focused on him at the centre. See, Paul doesn't say that you must do it. He says you should. It's not a command, but the response is down to us. How much do we want to thank Jesus for what he's done? Secondly, and probably least surprising, is in our giving. Pretty much self-explanatory. We thank God through our giving and our finances. We give to support God's work in our own church and the wider church around the world. We give to support his mission work, his gospel work, and the spread of his word. You want to thank Jesus for what he's done? Bring out the checkbook. Very simple. Again, how much do you want to thank Jesus for what he's done? And thirdly, in our sharing, you want to thank Jesus for what he's done? Tell someone. Very simple. Tell someone of the greatness that he's done, the great love. Tell someone of the robes that he's given you, the rags that he's taken away, the life that he's given you back. Tell someone. Again, how much do you want to thank Jesus? You may not be able to thank Jesus fully in our words for what he's done. But living our lives with him at the centre, supporting his work and sharing his word certainly go some way to thanking him. And I'm going to close, I think I'm going to listen to a song in a minute, which picks up, I think, that theme of that leper. He was trapped in a life that was going nowhere. Trapped in his rags, trapped in his chains. And then when he met Jesus, he took away that and gave a new life. But one final thought from Paul. Paul says, for Christ's love in us compels us. Compels us. See, the word compel means, literally, leaves me with no choice. And I wonder, does the love of Christ compel us? Does it leave us with no choice? That leper was compelled to thank God. Eddie Rickenbacker was compelled to thank God. And are we compelled to thank God? How much do we want to thank Jesus for what he's done?
One of the things I've felt as I've got older is that I can't always make out all the words in a song. And people tell me that with some of the modern songs, that's perhaps just as well. But one